We'll be studying tonight primarily from 2 Corinthians, so if you'd like to open your New Testaments to that book, we'll be there in just a moment. 2 Corinthians. Throughout history, God has asked some pretty hard things of some of His most faithful people. We can turn to various examples of Old Testament and New and see men and women of great faith allowed to go through various trials by God. And I suppose as we begin to examine some of those lives, one in the New Testament sort of rises to the top, and that's the Apostle Paul. And in the book of 2 Corinthians, we have a glimpse, I suppose, more deeply into Paul's thoughts and feelings than we get anywhere else in the New Testament. And a lot of these inner thoughts have to do with his trials and tribulations. So I'd like for us to think about the life of Paul tonight from the book of 2 Corinthians. If you would, let's turn back early in the book to chapter 1. Sprinkled throughout the book are a variety of references to the hardships and trials that Paul has gone through for the sake of the gospel. In verses 8 and 9 of chapter 1, "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead." The key phrase there is the last one I just read, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. That sort of reminiscent of Abraham in Hebrews 11, and then from the story in Genesis of his being commanded to offer Isaac as a burnt offering, the child of promise. And we later on in Hebrews get that glimpse of the inner workings in Abraham's mind, that he thought that God would raise him from the dead if necessary. What great faith Abraham had, but what great trial God put that faith to. And Paul's going through similar things. And he says, we were burdened above measure, above strength. That is, Paul faced some things that he didn't think he could handle personally. They were beyond his capacity to deal with of his own resources. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, look at verses 8 and 9 again. 2 Corinthians 4, 8 and 9. "We are hard-pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed." Again, Paul feels the pressure and the stress from every side. Sometimes in life it gets to be that way for us. We don't know which way to turn. It seems if we turn this way, there are problems. And if we turn that way, there are problems. And sometimes there just seems to be no way out of the circumstance that we're in. And despair can overtake us. But back up a verse, to verse 7. "We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us." Paul had a tremendous consciousness of God in his life. He was conscious that he himself was not able to deal with everything that God was asking him to deal with as an apostle. But even as we were talking about Philemon this morning in our class, if you were in that class, we were speaking about Paul's admonitions to Philemon to accept Onesimus, his runaway slave, who had been converted by Paul, to accept him back. And how Paul was trying to lift Philemon's thinking to a higher plane and to look at this returned slave through the eyes of spirituality and realize there was so much more value to that life and so many higher principles that were at stake in receiving him back than would appear to a carnal thinking person. Well, if we're going to withstand the trials and the tribulations of life, we're going to have to develop this higher thinking, a consciousness of the power of God working in us and we not relying upon our own strength. Another example, we'll look in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and we'll begin reading in verse 23. And let me set up the context for you while you're turning there. The reason Paul goes into this review of what he's gone through in life is because there are false apostles going behind him and trying to compromise his work. And what Paul is doing is he's having to defend himself legitimately as an apostle because some of the Corinthians are beginning to listen to these false apostles. And he earlier says in chapter 11, up around verse 13, that they're false apostles and deceitful workers and so on and so forth. And so what he's trying to do is explain his legitimacy as an apostle, but he doesn't do it by boasting of his accomplishments. He does it by boasting of what he's been willing to suffer for the sake of the Lord. So he says in verse 23, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. That is, he's very hesitant to do what he's starting to do. Anything that sounds like boasting, Paul says, this is not a good idea, but you forced me to do it, is what he's telling. I speak as a fool. I am more. They say they're apostles. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity. Again, Paul is desiring rightfully to defend himself as an apostle, to defend himself as a legitimate apostle, but he understands the danger of pride. So he goes about this very carefully. And you notice what he's boasting in here is the things that he's suffered, not the things that he's accomplished. But even then, it's like he's very uncomfortable with what he's doing. So he throws in this story. In verse 31, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is blessed forever, knows that I'm not lying. In Damascus, the governor under Aretas the king was guarding the city of the Damascenes with a garrison desiring to apprehend me. But I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped from his hands. Well, there's one of those cases where he says, I was in peril of the city. I was in peril of the Gentiles. And I think he's telling the story, and you can sort of, you know, close your eyes and picture the great Apostle Paul being let down in a basket by a rope in order to escape Damascus. Not a very flattering portrayal. Not the great, strong Apostle Paul willing to stand up to his enemies, but getting out of town through an open window. Again, it's not of Paul. He's learned in this life that he has been living for the Lord. He has learned humility. He's learned that the power is not of him. And he's learned to depend on God. Pretty rough life. And one that perhaps we don't appreciate so much because we tend to just label him an apostle and put him up on a shelf and say, special case. But this man is giving his life. Not pursuing his own selfish ambitions, perhaps as we might be. Not building a family and gaining property and building a home and climbing the corporate ladder, as it were. Here's a man who's given up all. For what? Shipwreck, stoning, hunger, exposure, enemies on every side, in the body and out of the body. And yet God seems to know our breaking point. He seems to know what we need in order to continue. So, in chapter 12, Paul begins to tell about how the Lord has blessed him with a special gift that, in essence, has kept him going. A vision, perhaps even of the future, by letting him sort of get up on his tippy toes and stick his nose over the windowsill and look into heaven itself. It is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know, or whether out of the body I do not know, God knows, such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows again, to sort of tell his, perhaps, I don't know, confusion or uncertainty of exactly what was happening to him, how he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities. For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will speak the truth. But I forbear, lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. So he reviews here, partly in the third person. He speaks of a man, but contextually it's Paul. He's speaking of himself. And he tells about these wonderful visions that have been given to sustain him through all of the suffering and all of the trial. But he turns right around and says, along with the vision, God turned right around and gave me a thorn. And lest I should be exalted above measure, in verse 7, by the abundance of the revelations. You ever wonder who he's talking about in the third person in verses 1 through 6? He's telling you in verse 7, it was me. But he's reluctant to use I. He doesn't want to fall into prideful boasting. Lest I should be exalted above measure, by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. So let me ask you this question. Which did God think Paul could handle better? Visions or thorns? We have this lengthy statement in various places in this book of the trials and the difficulties and what he suffered here and there and everywhere he went. We can add to this what Luke supplements in Acts, and then we can even go to books like 1 and 2 Timothy, where he reviews some of his own sufferings with Timothy to encourage him. Paul's life was one of extreme hardship. And to offset that, God gives him some visions of paradise. But even in that one great blessing, there's a little goad, a little reminder, whatever this thorn is, we don't know. Does it not appear to you that God thought he could handle the thorns, the trials, the difficulties better than he could handle that which might exalt him? Do you suppose it might be the same with us? That the greater danger that we face might be the prosperity, the exaltation, the accomplishments, the things that we might consider to be desirable in life, the marks of excellence and success, that those might be the things that might cause us to be compromised more quickly. Which do we fear the most? Life sometimes brings, if not outright poverty to us, at least concern on a material level. And it might bring poverty. It doesn't take much illness in this life to break the bank. Poverty, uncertainty. I think we would all say that, you know, we don't really care for a cloudy future, that when things are scrambled and uncertain as to how things are going and life is not predictable, that's sort of unsettling. And anxieties, life presents to us many reasons to worry if we allow ourselves to. We look to the future and there might be a lot of things that concern us. Threats, the threat of harm coming to us, not necessarily bodily, but in other ways that can cause us problems. Illness, alienation, agitation, which do we fear the most? That or wealth, routine, peace, security, health, friendship, comfort? which are sort of the offsets of the other. I think most of us, probably looking at the list, would say we fear the things on the left more than we fear the things on the right. I wonder if we have that straight. That perhaps it's the things on the left that remind us that the power is not in ourselves. That the reliance should not be upon ourselves. Now, I'm not saying we should necessarily desire the things on the left. But when they come to us, and they will, is there not something for us to learn from those things? How much of our energy might go into making sure that within our own power, our lives are what's on the right side? How much prayer, how much energy, how much work, how much money, how much conscious thinking, planning, preparation goes into making our lives the characteristics on the right? And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying, do we realize perhaps the insidious danger that might lie with those things? The Lord seemed to think that Paul could handle the hardships okay. He sure let him have enough of them. And when he did give him the vision of heaven, he moderated that with the thorn to make sure he stayed humble and dependent on God. Well, look at chapter 12 and verse 8. I want you to see here what Paul says as to how he learned to look at weakness. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. Isn't that the natural response? If our lives are plagued by the things on the left on the screen, isn't this the natural response? And I'm not saying it's wrong. But when we are plagued by some of these things that trouble us very deeply, our natural inclination is to pray to God to remove it. I sure wish you'd take these things away from me because I'm miserable. I'm suffering in my soul and I wish it was gone. And that's what Paul did. And he didn't do it once. He didn't do it twice. Concerning this thing, I didn't just pray, you see. He says, I pleaded with the Lord. I pleaded with Him. Whatever this is, brethren, he was suffering. And it was miserable. And he thought it would be best if it was gone, and he pleaded with the Lord to take it away. But in verse 9, here's the answer. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. What could you withstand if the Lord said that to you? I mean, literally, if we lived in the day where the Lord was still giving audible words from heaven, and you were pleading about some situation in life of suffering or hardship, and the Lord answered you and said, I've already done for you what I'm going to do in this regard, and I'm not going to change it, but I want you to see how strong I am to support you in this. Wow. Wouldn't that be a blessing? And wouldn't we walk away from that situation and gladly endure what it is that we're dealing with? But the key phrase there is, my strength is made perfect in weakness. From that answer, Paul then begins to look at his life differently. He looks at the hardships that he's suffering in a different way. Therefore, based on what the Lord answered me, based on the truth, based on His awareness of my life and what He wanted to come from these hardships, therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul changes the way that he looks at these things on the left side of the screen. They're not taken away, and they're not going to be taken away from us all the time in life. We're going to suffer through some of these things. And yes, we want them removed. On the other hand, I think the key to dealing with them is to realize that when we are weak, an opportunity is given for the power of God to shine through us. I suspect that a lot of us have had a fairly difficult week. Hard to concentrate on things. Energy level, maybe a little bit low. Deeply concerned as to what's happened and what's going to happen. I think probably some of us have questioned our own motives and things, our judgments about things, our sense of control in our own lives. Some have shared with me the very things that I have felt during the week. Circumstances come along in life and make it very difficult for us to feel any sense of control, power. It's very unsettling on the one hand, but boy, does it remind you who we depend on. And as we talk this morning, the importance of a time like this is to examine ourselves deeply and ask ourselves, who is it we're serving and who is it we depend on? I said in the lesson this morning, I would suspect that most of us have said more prayers in the last week than we've maybe said in a while. And I would go further and say they were probably more fervent. We've probably prayed for each other more in the last week than we might have in recent days. Our sense of dependence on God perhaps is keener. We have an understanding, as with Paul, that it's really not of us what's going to be accomplished for the Lord. If you would, turn back to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. In verse 16, Paul is speaking of, again, his life and work as an apostle. To the one we are the aroma of death to death, to the other the aroma of life to life. We read from 1 Corinthians this morning where the preaching of the gospel is foolishness to those that are perishing. No consideration given to Paul. To others, the gospel is the power of eternal life. Different people assess the message of the gospel and the preaching of the gospel in different ways. And as Paul considers this stress, this contradiction in which he's living as an apostle, he says, and who is sufficient for these things in verse 16? You ever feel that way? That something comes upon you in life and you find yourself asking, am I sufficient for this? Can I deal with this? And sometimes the heat gets turned up to a point that you answer yourself, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know how to cope with it. I don't know what judgment to use. I don't trust my own wisdom. I can't even control my emotions at times. Who is sufficient to deal with this life when life turns pretty rough? Then he answers himself down in verse 5 of chapter 3. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God. That's the lesson Paul has been saying to us throughout this book. Facing death, facing the apparent impossibility of going into a synagogue and preaching that the Messiah has come and convincing the Jews as a whole that truly has happened. And he's rejected time after time after time, even sometimes to the point of being stoned. I wonder if it ever crossed his mind, what good am I doing? What am I accomplishing in this? There's no way that this approach, it's not working. As he was chased from Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea down to Athens. I mean, one after the other. What good is this doing? Well, Jesus, I think, is the prime example of human weakness turned into God's strength. From the standpoint of human values, human values, measuring Jesus and His work just according to things that we would consider to be points of strength, Jesus was basically insignificant. You consider He had no physical characteristics that are pointed out that would have been attractive. Nothing is said about that. In fact, Isaiah 53 may suggest the opposite. No physical charisma to draw people. Nothing remarkable about Him. I wonder if we might not, after all the paintings and movies and everything we've seen, that perhaps subliminally has created an image of Jesus. What if He was this little bent-over, shrimpy-looking guy? I mean, would we be disappointed if He weren't 6'1", strapping, you know, and carpentry muscles? What if He was a physically deficient specimen? Would that affect the way we would look at Him? Where He was reared was considered the backwater of Palestine. His family life was extremely ordinary. Nothing that would suggest to the intelligentsia that He was anything. His education was not distinguished. But the ultimate weakness of all is dying as a runaway slave on a cross. And as was read this morning by Mike during the Lord's Supper, the people that walked by and cast ridicule and blasphemy and shame upon Him as He hung on the cross. I mean, from a human standpoint, measuring things by values that we might consider to be empowering values, Jesus was nothing. And God took that life and raised it up to His right hand and gave Him rule over all the universe. The power was of God. Yes, I know Jesus was divine. I'm not denying that. But Jesus emptied Himself of Himself and submitted Himself to the Father so that He might be exalted by Him and not exalt Himself. And in all of this, there's a counterintuitiveness. That is, we're so affected in our lives by things that the world considers to be strength. And sometimes we think the more strength we can amass, the more intelligence and the more education we can amass, the more money we can gather to ourselves, the higher we can climb in social circles, the bigger the congregation can be, and the more elders and deacons that we can have. If we could just somehow apply, human terms of big, grand, bold, powerful, that we'll then be able to give something to the Lord that He can use. Is that the way Paul thought? Paul learned this lesson. And this is basically the only point I want to make in the sermon tonight, because I think we need to learn it in our own lives. Paul learned this lesson. When I am weak, then I'm strong. Because it gives way to me inviting the Lord to come in and be strong for me. You see, when our lives look like what's on the right side of the screen here, you know what the tendency is in that? The tendency is to think that we are strong. That the circumstances of life suggest that I'm strong. Maybe my life is, or I think my life is, what's on the screen there because I am intelligent. Because I do my job well and can provide for my family. Because I have good health insurance and my job provides that. And I live in a nice neighborhood and so everybody can see that I'm successful. I'm responsible for that. And boy, then life comes along and takes it all away and reminds us that we don't have it. We don't have the strength. Life can be very, very difficult sometimes to where we feel that what we're facing is far over our heads. And when that happens to a Christian, it's something to be thankful for. Because life is teaching us, and perhaps God is teaching us, that we've taken our eyes off of the one who really matters. And we've begun thinking that we can handle it, we can control it, we can determine the outcome. And then suddenly we find ourselves in a situation where we're scratching our heads and saying, what in the world's going to happen? What's going to come of this? How am I going to handle it? Where am I going to get the wisdom to speak so that a good outcome happens? If we rely upon ourselves, we're going to push God out of our lives. And I think that's why God gave Paul so many hardships. It kept Paul conscious of his dependence on God, because if Paul was going to be the great apostle to the Gentiles and accomplish what we can look back and see that he accomplished, he was going to have to remember one thing. He wasn't going to do it by his own power, by his own resources. And so then, you notice, back in chapter 12, Paul is not saying here that through all of these things he's learned to tolerate infirmities and reproaches and needs and persecutions and distresses. Do you see that? He does not say, I've learned to tolerate this. What he says is, I've learned to take pleasure in it, in verse 10. It is really, really hard to take pleasure in trials and tribulations. Our highest ambition might be to learn to tolerate it and come through it with some wisdom. And yet Paul says, I have come to take pleasure in them. But then you notice what he also says in that verse. He's learned to take pleasure in these things for Christ's sake. For what it might reflect on Christ. If I face these circumstances and I recognize within myself and I even go to God and pray and say, this is way over my head. This is way over my head. I don't know what to do next. But I know that you know what to do. And Lord, keep me from messing this thing up. And to tie into the lesson this morning, this is your church. You're the head of this church. We are simply members of the body and sheep in the flock. Do with us what you want done. Because right now, I'm afraid to do anything. If we find ourselves in that situation, you know, we can take pleasure in it. If we're looking at Him, if we're truly depending on God's power. And so that's why I think Paul rejoices in such circumstances of his life. It's conditioned him to see the Lord most clearly and depend on His power and strength, His will to be done. And that's what we all should be striving for. Actually, it's the good times of life that retard this process. It's the trials that bring it out. Are you a Christian? Do you have this kind of higher view of life that you can measure what happens to you? The fears, the anxieties, the setbacks, the failures. Can you handle it because you serve a higher being, God, who loves you, who cares about you, who empowers you to deal with things that are way beyond your resources? We extend the invitation of the Lord to you to come to Him tonight if you've not done so. And surrender your life to Him. And acknowledge the fact that, yet, not only can you not handle some of the things in this life, but surely none of us can handle eternity without His help. How are we going to handle death? How are we going to handle the fate that awaits us all beyond the grave? How are we going to do that when sometimes we can't balance our bank account? Who are we depending on for this life and the growth and development and the fellowship with God and then life eternal afterward? We encourage you to depend on the Lord, to come to Him and acknowledge your powerlessness in the grip of sin and under the dominion of Satan. And by confessing His name, believing in Jesus as the Son of God, repenting of your sins, determining to turn away from that bondage and to submit to the Lord and to be baptized into Christ, you can be free. And then have the power of God on your side. Can we help you obey the gospel while we're standing and singing?